Our second reading from the letter to the Hebrews has this beautiful image of the heavenly Jerusalem, this place where everyone is welcome to gather on the mountain of the Lord, to celebrate with the Lord on this wonderful feast, to be there sharing in the fellowship, sharing around the table. We're told that in this place, that everyone is a firstborn son. Everyone is a citizen of heaven. It's just a fabulous vision. But what really struck me this week, particularly on Wednesday when I attended a forum at the University of Wollongong about refugees, is how far removed this vision is from the current experience in our country. That we've turned from a place where indeed everyone is made welcome, that everyone is treated as a citizen, where everyone is treated as a firstborn son, and to a place where so many who come to our shores are just utterly despised, rejected, and we do our best to turn them away. And I read during the week a letter that Bishop Eugene Hurley, the Bishop of Darwin, wrote to Tony Abbott. Bishop Eugene used to be the bishop down in Port Pirie, and so he spent many years working in the refugee camps that the government set up at Woomera and Baxter and other places. And so I just want to read this letter to you. It's, "Dear Mr. Abbott, I've just returned to my office from the Wickham Point and the Bladen detention centres here in Darwin. Sadly, I've been involved with detention centres since the creation of the Woomera Centre, followed by Baxter, and now over the last 6 years with the various and expanding centres here in Darwin. I experience once again today the suffocating frustration of the unnecessary pain we inflict on one another. I celebrated Holy Mass with a large number of Vietnamese families made up of men, women, children, and women waiting to give birth. The celebration was prayerful and wonderful until the moment of parting. I was reminded of something a young man said to me during one of my visits to Woomera all those years ago. I was saying something about freedom. He replied, 'Father, if freedom is all that you have known, then you have never known freedom.' I sense the horrible truth of that statement again today. I was also conscious of that beautiful speech made when the UNHCR, the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, accepted the Nobel Prize in 1981. In part, it states, "Throughout the history of mankind, people have been uprooted against their will, time and time again. Lives and values built from generation to generation have been shattered without warning. But throughout history, mankind has also reacted to such upheavals and brought succor to the uprooted, be it through individual gestures or concerted action and solidarity. Those people have been offered help and shelter and a chance to become dignified, free citizens again. Through the ages, the giving of sanctuary has become one of the noblest traditions of human nature. Communities, institutions, cities, and nations have generously opened their doors to refugees." It's the end of the quote. "I sit here at my desk with a heavy heart and a deep and abiding sadness. The leaders of the nation that my father, as an immigrant, taught me to love with a passion have adopted such a brutal, uncompassionate, and immoral stance towards refugees. I imagine he would be embarrassed and saddened by what has occurred. It occurred to me today that neither the Prime Minister or yourself know the story of any of these people, neither do the great Australian community. I find that it's quite impossible to dismiss these people with all the mindless, well-crafted slogans when you actually look into their eyes, hold their babies, and feel their grief. There has been a concerted campaign to demonize these people and keep them isolated from the great Australian public. It has been successful in appealing to the less noble aspects of our nation's soul, and that saddens me. I feel no pride in this attitude that leads to such reprehensible policies on both sides of our political spectrum. I cringe when people draw my attention to elements of our history, like the White Australia policy, and the fact that we didn't even count our Indigenous sisters and brothers until the mid-1900s. I cringe and wish those things were not true. It is hard to imagine that we as a nation could have done such things. I judge the attitude of our political leaders to refugees and asylum seekers to be in the same shameful category as the above mentioned. in years to come. Australians who love this country will be in disbelief that we as a nation could have been so uncharacteristically cruel for short-term political advantage. It seems that nothing will influence your policy in this matter other than the political imperative. But I could not sit idly by without feeling complicit in a sad and shameful chapter of this country, which I've always believed to be better than that. Sometime, I would love to share with you some of the stories I've had the privilege of being part of over the years. I'm sure you would be greatly moved. Sadly, for so many, such a moment will be all too late. Yours sincerely, Bishop Eugene Hurley. Yeah. I don't know if you've had the chance to ever meet Bishop Eugene, but he's just a most remarkable human being, a most remarkable leader and priest and bishop. The gospel today calls us precisely to the same response. The gospel today challenges us at the very basis of who we are as a people, as a church. In the Gospel of Luke, again and again, we have to look at those moments when Jesus gathers people around him at a meal. Because it's there that the church is created. It's there that the sense of who we are as a community is formed. It's shaped and fashioned by the people that we invite to share with us at table. Jesus, when he was around, had what the scholars call this open table fellowship. Everyone was welcome, saints and sinners alike. Those who were the upright in the community and those who were despised. This was at the heart of who he was and the sense of what the church was meant to be about. But sadly, the church has become just like everybody else. The church has simply accepted the attitudes of the society rather than standing up and challenging them, rather than saying, no, we cannot do this any longer. We're called, as Bishop Eugene said, to be better than this. We're called to embrace this sense of who we are as a people of God. We're called indeed to respond as we were invited last Sunday in the gospel, to become more like Jesus in order to experience that salvation, to become more like Jesus in order to experience that freedom that only Christ can offer us, the freedom that truly liberates and allows us to experience what we have been called to be. Last week I spoke about one of the teachings of St. John of the Cross and that sense to have an habitual desire to imitate Christ in all that we do by bringing our lives into conformity with his. A little bit later in that same passage, St. John gives us a powerful reminder of how we can actually live this, how we can choose to embrace this. He says, endeavor to be inclined always, not to the easiest, but to the most difficult, not to the most delightful, but to the most distasteful, not to the most gratifying, but to the less pleasant, not to what means rest for you, but to hard work, not to the consoling, but to the unconsoling, not to the most, but to the least, not to the highest and most precious, but to the lowest and most despised, not to wanting something, but to wanting nothing. Now, in the week ahead, as we reflect as an Australian community upon our obligation to vote in the most just and noble politicians that we can, we need to reflect upon all of those things, all of the challenges that are presented before us. And yes, there are many issues that are crucial, many issues that are important. On the brochures that are around the church, this powerful call from of Human Life International to remind us about those essential human life issues like abortion and euthanasia and the respect of women and children. All of those are essential issues as well. But when it comes to an issue like refugees and migrants, let's remember and remove all of those falsehoods that are part of the discussion at the moment. With part of the forum during the week, Phil Glendenning, who's the director of the Edmund Rice Centre and the chair of the Refugee Council in Australia, he reminded us a number of basic facts. The first is that people who come by boat are not queue jumpers. There is no queue. He gave us one statistic, for example. He said if Australia was to attempt to process the number of people in Pakistan who are currently looking for refugee status, it would take more than 4,000 years to process all of those who are legitimately seeking to be listed as refugees right now. How can we talk about a queue when that's just the refugees in one country out of the dozens and dozens of places? There are 45.3 million refugees currently in the world. We have to do our part. We have to do what we have signed up for under the United Nations Declaration. We have to find that place of welcome and embrace. So don't call them queue jumpers, because it's just absolutely false. Another thing that is absolutely false is to call them illegals. It is not illegal to seek asylum. It is not illegal to turn up on our shore. It is not illegal to come seeking the refuge that is one of their human rights. If it was illegal, we would arrest them. But we don't. So don't call them illegals. Say they're asylum seekers, because that is what they are. Let's lift the discussion. Let's remove all of those pejorative terms that the shock jocks and the tabloid press are so want to do. No. Let's speak about this truthfully, honestly, as a Christian community, a people who are dedicated and committed to serving the Lord, to being formed and shaped by people who desire to be marked not by the public discourse that is so often false, but by the truth and beauty of the gospel. Let's be challenged today to stand up for what is true and to allow this community to be a place of welcome. I'm just old enough to remember what it was like back in Bega when the first few families came to Bega as Vietnamese refugees, and the parish welcomed them. The parish went out of their way to provide all of their basic needs. The parish succeeded in finding places to welcome them. Why can't we do the same today? Back then, of course, it was a bipartisan approach from Australian politics to find that place of welcome. We took so many more refugees in then than we do now. What has changed? Why can't we return and be restored back to a place where compassion and humanity lies at the center of our discussion?